Coming up on Tech News Today, Zuckerberg's plan to bring the internet to the two-thirds of the world that doesn't get it yet. Google tries to get the NFL into their camp, and the Internet of Things is real. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 21st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting, pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit TNT.Ting.com. That's TNT.Ting.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Chad Johnson.
And this is the show where we try to bring you the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Fuse it up. Mark Zuckerberg authored a piece called Is Connectivity a Human Right? He's certainly not the first to ponder that, but he's also created a partnership called Internet.org that includes Facebook, Samsung, MediaTek, Nokia, Qualcomm, Opera, and Ericsson. The organization aims to bring internet access to the two-thirds of the planet's population who don't have it. Among the goals are to bring down the cost of mobile data access to 1% of the current price within 5 to 10 years. They also hope to make data transmission more efficient and encourage business models that make it in the company's best interest to meet these goals of access. The organization will not be helping to build out infrastructure.
The Wall Street Journal reports that the National Security Agency's surveillance program can access up to 75% of all U.S. internet traffic. The data comes from major internet nodes across the country, and most of the leading telecom companies help gather the info, according to interviews that the paper conducted with current and former security officials. The Wall Street Journal also reports various programs, with each telecom provider having their own code names like Blarney, Fairview, Oakstar, Lithium, and my favorite, Stormbrew.
This morning, Bradley Manning was sentenced to 35 years in military prison after being convicted of 20 counts related to leaking documents to WikiLeaks. Manning will also have his rank reduced to private, forfeit pay and allowances, and be dishonorably discharged. Manning will need to serve at least one-third of his sentence before being eligible for parole.
All Things D reports Google CEO Larry Page and YouTube content head Robert Kinkel met with NFL officials, including Commissioner Roger Goodell, to discuss many things, including the rights to the Sunday Ticket package currently provided by DirecTV. That deal is up after the 2014 season. The NFL is a league of U.S. sporting teams that throw and carry an oblong ball in a game similar to rugby, but with forward passing allowed and a lot more equipment used.
Netflix has replaced the instant queue for U.S. customers with a new feature called My List, a watch it later list that replaces the instant queue for the U.S. members and provides international users with an alternative to the recommendation algorithm. My List adds a row to the home screen where before now streaming members only saw recommendations from Netflix's algorithm. It will be available on all of Netflix apps and will roll out globally over the next couple of weeks.
Mark Maffrett, CTO of Beyond Trust, has begun a crowdfunded reward for Khalil Shrita. Shrita reported a bug to Facebook that would allow any person to post on any other person's timeline without being friends. Now, Facebook denied him any reward, claiming that the discovery wasn't a bug. Shrita then posted a message on Mark Zuckerberg's timeline to prove his point. As of right now, the GoFundMe funding goal of $10,000 has already been reached.
As we mentioned earlier in the week, Comcast responded to a subpoena revealing a subscriber associated with Prendel Law as posting copyrighted BitTorrent files in order to catch infringers. Attorneys hired by Comcast sent a letter to Torrent Freak claiming it was the intellectual property of Comcast and must remove the letter within 5 days. Comcast, however, has stopped the problem and told GigaOM this notice was sent in error and we have advised Torrent Freak to disregard it. We apologize for any confusion.
Google has launched a website for Google Helpouts, a previously rumored P2P video chat helpline service. So anybody can sign up to receive or provide help through a Google Plus account, and providers can make money off of their chat sessions. You enter your skills, your availability, your qualifications, what you want your price to be, and Google will match you with people in need of your assistance. Payments will be handled by Google Wallet, and Google will take a 20% cut. Helpouts support desktop browsers, Android, and iOS, and Google says there is a 100% money-back guarantee.
LG announced a new 5.5-inch smartphone display today, the first to feature a quad HD 2560 by 1440 resolution with a density of 538 pixels per inch. It's also only 1.21 millimeters thick with a 1.2 millimeter bezel. The panel has 3.7 million pixels, four times that of a 720p display. LG did not announce when we might see one of these built into a phone.
Yola announced that Sailfish OS-powered smartphones are fully booked by customers. Some customers have already paid partial payments to reserve the device. Yola didn't mention specific numbers when it came to how many devices were booked, but the first Sailfish device costs around €400 and will ship by the end of this year. A new batch will be up for order in the fall.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the simplest way I've ever found to get rid of old gadgets and get some cash. No hassle. If you want a new Samsung Galaxy S4 or that new iPhone that might be coming out or an HTC One, whatever gadget you're in the market for, you might want to get rid of your old one. And you say, well, I need to buy the new one before I get rid of the old one. Not exactly. Gazelle locks in your price for 30 days. So if you know you're about to get a new phone, go to Gazelle, get a quote on the old phone, find out how much you're going to get. And then you got 30 days to go get your new phone, transfer all the data, get all of that taken care of. And then you can actually send the old phone afterwards. And as long as you're within 30 days, you still get paid the same amount, get paid by cash, get paid by check. In fact, if you get paid by PayPal, that's convenient. Or you can get paid by Amazon gift card and get 5% bonus. Gazelle's also buying back a larger selection of tablets. In addition to the iPad, you can now sell select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets. What's your iPhone, Samsung, or other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to help discuss round the table, the stories of the day, it's good to have David Spark back with the show from Spark Media Solutions. How's it going, David?
It's going great.
Good to see you.
Thank you for having me back on.
Thank you for being
here. I'm back in the studio with you, who is rarely remote from all the way over to Santa Monica.
It's odd. It's an odd feeling.
Is it?
No, not really.
Yeah, it feels the same.
It feels pretty much the same. Let's start off with talking about internet.org, Facebook's new way of trying to help the world. Two-thirds of the world, they say, doesn't have an internet connection. It's only growing at about 9%. They want to speed that up. Their goal, cut cost to access the internet to 1% of the current access cost within 5 to 10 years. And that, they're mostly talking about mobile internet in these cases. They want to make it affordable. They want to make it more efficient. They want to simplify apps, improve transmission hardware. Qualcomm's working on that. They want to make battery power better. And they want to help business drive access. They want to make it mutually beneficial for someone to have an incentive for app developers, device makers, OEMs, and others to join in on this effort. However, they don't plan to change the infrastructure. Michuki Mwangi was quoted in a New York Times article. He's the regional development manager for Africa at the Internet Society. And he says one of the big problems in Africa is that they lack interconnection points. If you request a YouTube video, it gets routed through Europe. That drives up the cost. Creating more connection points would require navigating a thicket of government interest and powerful incumbents. At the very least, he'd like them to cache copies of their popular sites like YouTube, like Facebook, locally in Africa on more servers to speed up access. That's not something that Internet.org is going to deal with. So it seems like Internet.org would like more people to have access in a long-term bet that they'll turn them into customers. Now, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. David, do you think this is more self-interested or self-important white man's burden type of thing, or is it just a good thing?
It's all of the above, but as you know, they have a rough plan on what they're going to do, so we don't exactly know. But this may also be what it really looks like, a big PR call out to get other people to jump on board, of which they've got a lot of players on board as well. Plus, they're kind of being competitive with Google and their Project Loon thing, although I think both have said that no one group can do this all, even with the billions that both organizations have. I would also throw out that if I was a stockholder in Facebook, I wouldn't think this would be the best use of money at this time, even though it is a very worthwhile endeavor, you know, giving more people access so there's less of that digital divide. But I would be a little annoyed if I was a stockholder thinking, hey, you just went, you know, you're starting to go do pretty well with the mobile advertising. Let's keep it going before, you know, we start to sink into a hole again.
It's an interesting point whether it's a good use of money. I'm thinking maybe it is because Facebook cannot possibly grow any further than it can unless they other people have internet access, right? Unless they want to do deals with China, which seems like that's a very, very contentious point when it comes to Facebook. So if they provide more internet for more people, they become Facebook users. I don't think it's self-interested as long as the internet these people get is not like the Facebook internet. Like if it's some kind of limited version where you have to go to Facebook.com and that's the way you get your internet, that'd be kind of lame. But to get this stuff, it's really it's self-interest aligned with the interest of people getting internet because at worst, they get information, lots of information they didn't have access to, and Facebook gets more and more subscribers. So then everybody who was born on Earth gets a Facebook account.
Yeah, I kind of feel like as a shareholder, doesn't this sound like the perfect endeavor? I mean, you get more people signed on to Facebook and potentially giving Facebook money at some point. And there's this sort of a goodwill thing saying, well, we're part of this huge, huge organization. That's,
but it's a
that's
really long-term play, others. Sarah. It's a super long-term play. You know, are the people who are investing Facebook looking 5 years plus down the line? I mean, that's more
They should argument. Be.
What,
5 years isn't a very long time for Facebook.
Well, I 5 years, a lot changes with Facebook.
5 years is an eternity for most shareholders who think quarter to quarter. A point well taken. But I think they probably are behind Zuckerberg in this because they know that they've maxed out, they've saturated the current markets. And the only way to be able to expand into those other markets is to prop them up.
Again, I'm playing a little devil's advocate here. I'm very much for more people getting access. I should point that out.
Why do you hate poor people, David? And when did you start? No, we know that's not what you're saying. No. Absolutely.
But I'm just sort of, you know, arguing the sort of the obvious point when, you know, you're dealing with these people that are, you know, react on a moment's notice to markets, that if a major endeavor is made here. Also, you're looking at what if they are the underserved, they're not going to be the biggest revenue generators as opposed to people in affluent cities that are getting Facebook as well.
Well, and Bill Gates took Google to task for Project Loon, the floating internet project, because he said that doesn't help you solve your diarrhea. Bill Gates, not a big fan of Google, I expect. Big fan of Facebook, though. Kind of a pal of Mark Zuckerberg. I wonder how he's going to react to this.
Well, they're also invested in Facebook as well.
And Zuckerberg would like to get Bill Gates on board, or at least get Microsoft on board, if not Bill Gates, to join the consortium here. It'll be interesting to see. I think this really is self-interested, but I think it's an example of self-interest that could end up doing good.
But you know, Mark Zuckerberg has also been very, very... this isn't the first sort of doing good project Mark Zuckerberg has announced. What was the percentage of his money he's giving away for education was a huge place. So it's not like he's you know, this is a PR ploy. He's already shown a trend that he is trying to use the wealth that he's made from Facebook and the access that it has to do good for a much larger community.
Are you ready for some football?
I want to be.
All right. You're going to watch it on Google?
I
on
would
YouTube,
love to.
And that happens because it's totally happening,
if
right?
If it doesn't, I don't know if it's totally happening. It might happen, right? Because all things D reports that Google's Larry Page with YouTube's content boss, Robert Kinkel, I don't know how to say his last name.
Kinkel. I could be wrong.
Is in talks with the NFL. Among the topics discussed was the Sunday ticket package, which DirecTV currently owns. We've been talking about DirecTV a lot with this package here. The deal ends in 2014 with the 2014 NFL season. All Things D says NFL's meeting with multiple Silicon Valley companies, and this trip is a trip they take annually, so it's not necessarily like a special Google trip. Sunday ticket right now costs $1 billion a year for DirecTV, and I looked up Google's financials for the second quarter. As of June 30th, 2013, cash equivalents, and marketable securities were $54.4 billion. They have a giant hoard of money sitting there. David, the deal seems really unlikely. We're going to see the NFL on YouTube. But should Google just throw money at the NFL to the point where they get the Sunday ticket?
I'm surprised that they see it as unlikely because I think this would be a killer play for them. I mean, really killer. I've always said that software drives hardware, and they want to try to drive people to, you know, watching Google TV or I guess through their Chromecast, whatever. I mean, I look back at people bought televisions because of the Milton Berle show. That's the only way you could watch the Milton Berle show. Also, I don't know if you remember, there was a time that people were very, very hesitant about purchasing things online. Mm. And then Amazon secured the rights for, I think it was the second Harry Potter book. The fourth one. And the only way you could get first access to it is if you bought it on Amazon. This was probably people's first purchase online, and that sort of broke the ice. So this could be something very similar. I am a huge, huge football fan. The only way I'm going to be able to watch all these games is through Google TV, so I have to bite the bullet and go that direction. I think they should spend the $1 billion and do it.
I do too. Yeah. I think a lot of people would flock to the platform that otherwise just would never, ever care about it. Although something about Google Plus, the NFL, doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it's just because I pay so much attention to their, you know, let's go to the moon projects. I'm paraphrasing, but you know what I mean?
The
you know,
all those moon Google shots. Projects yeah, yeah. just...
They don't seem like a football company. At least the founding team doesn't. So,
I do think that it's a great idea for Google. I don't think it's as good of an idea for the NFL. And the reason is the broadcast networks are going to dig their heels in. Remember, the NFL Sunday Ticket is just your out-of-market games. Mm-hmm. They still have deals with NBC or with CBS, with Fox, and
ESPN and NBC.
ESPN, yeah. So those broadcasters do not want Sunday Ticket to go to an online-only play. They really are probably not excited about the fact that Sunday Ticket exists at all, but because it's out-of-market games, they know they can protect you watching whatever broadcast is happening on your local station. They're not going to want to allow those rights to go to Google, is my opinion.
Well, also, the other power of it is, you know, Sunday Ticket allowed you to watch, you know, multiple games at a time, but if it's on Google TV, the level of interactivity is going to ramp up through the roof, and so everyone's going to push for that experience on Google TV versus just, you know, watching it laid back, sitting on your TV, and then having your computer out.
So you're watching Sunday Ticket, and then like you're watching Google TV, and all these ads are being, or these companies are being added to circles, theoretically. I could see it working with Google Plus, but I think the real kick is YouTube, because if it's on YouTube, that's on lots of different platforms, not just stuck on Google TV. If they finally ever get a YouTube app on, I don't know, the Roku would be interesting, but Apple TV would then get it. Pretty much anybody who has a YouTube app, if it was YouTube Live,
Chromecast
would have it as well, so that really bridges a huge gap. And the thing about the NFL is they kind of dabble with online stuff, because I was thinking about the NBC deal. On the Sunday night games, they actually simulcast it online. You can get four different views of the game as it's going on, as it's being broadcast, probably by like a 20-second delay because it's being streamed. But they still allow that.
On NBC's website.
Right.
Not on some other person's website.
That's what I'm just like, I'm really curious. If they worked a deal with NBC, could they work a deal with Google to the point where they can allow something like
they
that?
They cooperate on the Olympics. It's not unheard of.
The Olympics, and not exactly a bunch that are like, yeah, put the content everywhere.
YouTube and NBC could totally partner up. Maybe that's more likely, is that YouTube and NBC partner up on a Sunday
ticket. But here's, by the way, and this would have to be fixed, YouTube, all the sort of interactivity within like annotation stuff currently does not work on mobile at all. And if people are going to want that, especially around like, you know, watching the Sunday ticket, they're going to have to fix that.
If you are a rugby or Australian football rules fan who doesn't care about the NFL, the reason this is important to you is the idea of sports going to online is one of those big hurdles to preventing all your television from going online.
No,
that's why we care.
That's the trigger, and that's why I mentioned the Harry Potter. I think that when that fourth book came out, that introduced a flood of people actually purchasing things online. And the hope is if this happened, this would be the flood of all programming going online.
Now, another thing you'll probably need is some sort of way to get that internet TV onto your television. One popular way is Apple TV, and they're getting a pretty popular new app. Right, Sarah?
Yeah, so Vivo, speaking of having agreements with Google, Vivo is already on Roku, it's already on Xbox, and the Wall Street Journal says it may be coming to an Apple TV app near you as soon as this week. Also one for smart TVs for Samsung owners. So the idea is that you'd have both access to on-demand music videos. That's if you're familiar with the Vivo YouTube channel, which is how a lot of people have gotten Vivo over the last few years. You're familiar with that. But also a 24 hours a day channel of original content that works a lot like the old MTV used to work for those of us old enough to remember when MTV played music videos.
Right. They did that.
Yeah. The idea is that it's a streaming channel, 24 hours long. And apparently Vivo is really interested in even bringing that to cable television at some point. It is a need that is no longer really filled by any networks that used to be all about music. Already on iOS, Android, and Windows 8, that channel. I actually went to it earlier today, and it's like there were two Chris Brown songs in a row, and I was like, well, I don't want to watch this. I'm so used to being able to say thumbs down or skip that it seemed a little odd to me, but it is an interesting idea. And, you know, it does a few things. A new app that's not only on Roku and Xbox, but apparently coming to Sony's PlayStation at some point, certainly on the Apple TV, helps Vivo move away from YouTube. You might remember Google decided to purchase a 10% stake in Vivo because Google doesn't want to get rid of those videos. They are easily the most popular videos consistently on YouTube, but they don't want to, you know, it's kind of like Facebook and Zynga, you know, it's like Vivo wants to be able to be its own entity and not rely too much on Google. So I don't know, I guess we're all old enough to remember the whole MTV model. Is this something that a new generation even wants, or are we too far into an on-demand world for it to work?
Well, don't we, I think people still like listening to radio, even if it's streaming radio, right? Mm-hmm. We like the sort of randomness of discovering something new. So I think a video channel still has a lot of charm to it because, you know, there's times where we want to program everything, and I think most of the times we'd rather just kind of relax and be exposed to it. But yeah, like what you just said, Sarah, my God, those videos, you look at the top 100 most popular videos on YouTube, 98% of them are music videos, and most of them are the Vivo videos. So it's kind of astonishing how popular that medium still is.
It's interesting to see the idea of just basically a streaming channel from Vivo, right? It's the sit back, run this thing, walk around, and it's always on.
Versus, as an option, right? You can still do on demand. You can still play your own.
But to have this I guess programmed program or this channel for you, as instead of that interactive thing of like Netflix on Apple TV where you have to keep hitting next, when they introduced the auto queuing thing on PlayStation 3, I'm like, that's the only way I'm doing Netflix now for marathons, because you don't have to think, you just run the thing. I think that, like, I think we're talking about some frame rate, this idea that some people just want to just turn on a channel and veg out, and this would be actually a really interesting idea, because music changes what, every 3 minutes, so you're not really caring, oh, that's terrible, maybe you want to interact with it but the thumbs down, but it'll be over in 2 minutes. What's the big deal?
Right. Yeah, I do think that we want Pandora if we want a lean back situation for music. We want something that's sort of customized. I don't know how many people are going to want a channel that someone else is picking the music for the way MTV was back in the 1980s.
No, but I think it's kind of a free flowing back and forth. I mean, there are times you want to listen to the radio, and then sometimes you want to just put in your CD. I mean, it's a very sort of simple concept that we've dealt with even before the internet existed. So to offer both capabilities is definitely what is wanted, I would believe.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Ting. We love Ting. No contracts, no early termination fees, no BS. It's an MVNO. That means they resell the Sprint network. No early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along services, no hidden stuff, no add-on charges. You get voicemail, you get caller ID, you get tethering, you get a hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding. All that stuff is just part of the package. No mysterious line items that you have to like call to figure out, what does this mean? And you can have as many devices as you want on one plan. You pay for what you use. They've got a powerful online account control panel, no hold customer support. Call 1-855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern. Real person will pick up the phone. And if it's outside of those hours, help.ting.com has active customer support forums. Here's how it works. You purchase your mobile device from Ting, so you make sure you're getting one. They have great phones. You'll receive it in about 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate your device with Ting. You can select a new phone number or port your existing one. Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used, not some imaginary guess on your part. You pay for what you use. Visit Ting today, tnt.ting.com. Save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Check out their savings calculator. You can see how much your company can save if you want to bring Ting into the enterprise. That's a great way to do it. Tech News Today viewers also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So visit tnt.ting.com and start saving today. And we thank Ting for their support of Tech News Today. Go check them out, just if nothing else, to show your support for the show. But we like the Ting guys. It's worth taking a look at. All right, Netflix rolling out a My Watch or My List. It's your watch list. It's your queue. It replaces the instant queue in the United States. International users actually get one for the first time. This is an alternative to recommendations. What it does differently is takes away the manual aspect of it. It's not whatever you added latest goes to the top and you have to go to the website and manually change the order. It decides based on what you've watched and what its recommendation engine knows how to order that list up. Now, if you're like, I don't want to give that control to Netflix, you can change it back to the manual sort if you want. It'll also include things like new season tags, so you know when a new season of a television show has been added to Netflix. And I like this, expiration dates, so that you can actually tell if something in your queue is about to expire because Netflix is losing the rights to it and go and watch it right away. This is getting a lot of reaction. A lot of people are very excited about this. When I first saw this story today, I was like, oh, that's nice. David, any guess why people are so thrilled? Maybe the international users, because they didn't have it.
Yeah, if you didn't have it. Like, look, Netflix is very, very aggressive about the whole recommendation process. Anything they can do to tweak it, they're going to do it better. And they're going to make an announcement every single darn tweak they make so they can make some news. So their stock price keeps going up. The hope to constantly get, they're probably purposely rolling out these tweaks slowly so they can pump out different news releases each time to keep the darn stock price up. But, I'm a Netflix subscriber. I like these kinds of things. So I'm always gung-ho for better recommendation. But what I'm more gung-ho for is more content on the actual network.
Well, I think that's the key here is like the recommendation engine was all based on you going to Netflix and saying, is this all a bunch of junk? Is there anything here that I want? Netflix saying, you might really like this series that you've never heard of. Netflix is now to the point where people are signing up because they're like, ooh, I heard Orange is the New Black is a really good series. I want to watch that. So it's Netflix is finally in a position that's powerful enough where you can sort of say, actually, there's a ton of stuff I want to see on Netflix. I'd like to take control here. And now it's just a better feature for those people who feel that way. So I think it's just Netflix having better options overall.
Agreed. And I have discovered a lot of stuff that I didn't even know about because of Netflix's recommendation engine. And enjoy.
The big thing for me as a user is the expiration dates, because there used to be another website that used to tie into the Netflix API, which they cut off that API access that would give you all of the new stuff.
They took the expiration dates out of the API because they said they were inaccurate. But they've since put them back.
They put them back?
Some of them.
Well, I think the streaming Flix or something, whatever the website was, but its function got deprecated effectively. But Netflix putting these tags and saying, hey, by the way, that thing in your queue is going away.
I like that. Yeah.
Because then you're going to have the drive to watch it, if anything at all. That, to me, is the big deal. Because I think you could see that in your queue. If you were on the web page, you'd see a little date. But to have it in this graphical way on the My List, I don't really care that they changed the name or they're reordering it. Like, that's nice.
The reordering sounds interesting. I'll see how good it works. Frankly, I just don't use the queue at all. Because I figure if I want to watch something, I search for it, and then I watch it. It's not like DVDs where it's like, oh, I'll have to wait for it, so I need to queue up a bunch of things. I've never really used the queue on the instant streaming. My wife uses it all the time, so.
That's why I like it, because I have a queue that's like a few years old at this point now, and I'm just like, please take this away from me. I don't want to control it anymore. Please recommend something for me. Just get it out of my hands.
I'm much more excited about the Internet of Things, about the Internet controlling all aspects of my physical life, Sarah.
Yeah, this is awesome. So SmartThings is a company that's basically supposed to help us, speaking of recommendations and discovery, discover connected devices that we can have in our homes that can talk to each other. It's the whole like, hey, wouldn't it be nice if you could control your lights from a remote location or open up locked doors and that sort of thing. This was started as a Kickstarter project last September and has moved right along. And today, SmartThings has launched the SmartThings Shop. So it's a store of curated by the company connected smart devices. Anything from a device that you plug into the wall that helps you be able to, dim your lights from a remote location or no via some sort of a surveillance camera. If your dog comes in from the doggy door or if a car pulls up in your driveway, all sorts of kind of interesting stuff. Now, you can buy a starter kit, which you need for pretty much any of these devices. This is how smart things started. There's a starter kit. There's two different tiers of it, $200 and a $3 one. So there's a bit of a barrier to entry. And then you can browse compatible devices. And there's a, you know, there's a handful in there. It's about 12 pretty cool devices. But the idea behind the company is that they say eventually, yes, we have a small-ish curated list here of cool devices, but we eventually want to make this just an open platform for developers and third-party manufacturers, the kind of thing where if you've got a device that would be able to talk to other devices that's going in this direction, SmartThings would just be the obvious store to host your wares. They have an iOS app that's live now. They say Android is coming soon, and I have to say, I love the idea of this, even though most of these products, you look at them and it's like, well, you know, $50 for something, remote lights turning on and off. Do I need something like that? I'd like to say that I do, but some of it seems kind of like early adopter prices. But I guess this is where it all starts, huh? David, what do you think? You excited?
I'm excited because it looks like it's a common platform for the two standards, which are Zigbee and Z-Wave for home automation. And those guys have been battling, I don't know how many years.
They were at CES in the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's ongoing. It never ends. And actually, I should disclose that about 4 years, I did some work for Z-Wave. But this thing's supposed to communicate with both, and it's the Internet of Things, so it's real communications among all the devices, where before, the devices really didn't talk to each other. They all had to come back to a sort of a home base and let the software determine how they're going to communicate. So I think it's pretty darn exciting, and it will hopefully put an end to the endless Z-Wave Zigbee battle, hopefully.
Yeah, looking at the website, I mean, I've looked into home automation for a very long time. The prices kept me out because I didn't feel like ponying up this much money for what Sarah's talking about. Like, oh, look, the light turns on and off. Mm-hmm. I can go to Radio Shack and get a much cheaper remote. Now, it didn't connect to smartphones back then. But I think SmartThings has a really intelligent design when it comes to their website. They're like, instead of just saying, yeah, you can buy this hub, which will explain this, they have the stuff listed as in automatically turn on off your lights, automatically trigger responses, lock unlock your door. So they give you the actual usage as opposed to saying, yeah, this thing, you plug in another device into it and then that'll have a separate app. If this is all centrally controlled, that's a bigger deal to me. It's this idea of your home actually being this one cohesive place where you're automating everything as opposed to going, is that on a Wemo? Is that on Zigbee? Is that on this? Is that on Z-Wave? You don't want to deal with that because you can't remember which app is controlling your refrigerator.
Well, also, and if you already did make the investment on one of these platforms, then you can start to add these services as well and not necessarily be locked in anymore to a Z-Wave or a Zigbee.
We like catalogs. I think that's one of the most brilliant things about this is the fact that for people who are already enthusiasts of the Internet of Things, this isn't probably a big deal. In fact, they may say you can get it cheaper elsewhere. But for people who are sort of interested or curious about it, it's a great way to see like, oh, I can do all of these things and here's how they interconnect. So if nothing else, it's good for letting people know what is actually possible now with something like home automation and beyond home automation. Let's finish up with Beats Music subscription service. GigaOm has some details on how this is going to work. Is this video or audio?
This is audio.
Okay.
So this is going to be their streaming audio competitor to RDO and Spotify and maybe iTunes Radio. Whatever you want to say is going to be their competitor. And so GigaOm's got a ton of details saying how this service is going to work. This was known as Project Daisy for a while, by the way. It got an official name on August 9th. I don't know how I missed that, but that's what happened. Beats Music has contracted with a bunch of musicians and music writers. They're making playlists for people to listen to. They've also contracted with a number of freelancers who have been compiling thousands of playlists on an assignment basis. Now, playlists are designed based on Beats Music editors. So they have editors who are telling freelancers what to do. Playlists can be based on the work of an artist, a genre, or even activities. So like workout playlists, things like that. Freelancers are told to build a playlist for certain types of listeners. So like a 40-year-old country fan, there should be a playlist for that person. Keep in mind the moods of the listeners and their activities, whatever they're doing. The average playlist is supposed to be less than 70 minutes. And GigaOm even got a bit of the Beats training manual that notes, avoid overly clever transitions and avoid elitism.
Don't be clever.
So after hearing all the way Beats is trying to make their music service stand out, they want this curated feel to it. Is that enough to compete with the other music streaming services, David?
Not at all. Not even slightly. They all have ability to customize playlists. All of them. And they have sometimes celebrity customized playlists. And this whole thing of no elitist, that's anyone who creates a playlist thinks themselves as an elitist on that subject. I saw, by the way, a great, great thread on Reddit a while ago, which asked the question, if you wanted someone to get into your music style, like you like a specific type of music, what would be the one song or the one album you would tell them to listen to? Now, that is sort of a way I think you can introduce people to new music is, what's the one thing that they should listen to if you want to get hooked into this style? Like, you want to get into honky-tonk, then this is, you know, what you should be listening to, kind of a thing.
It's like Desert Island Discs.
I really don't understand what a clever transition is in a playlist. What does that mean?
I don't know either.
Well, I know there are DJs who, like, they'll go from one song to another, and there's a pun in there somewhere, some kind of title, you know, and I think that's probably what they're saying is, like, don't, I'm trying to think of a good example here, but, you know, don't go from Jimi Hendrix, Are You Experienced, to Lakeshore Drive just because they both happen to be about drugs. You know, those aren't, you know, try to come up with a musically sound reason for going from one song to another.
It sounds like a vague set of tools for a bunch of freelance people who like music.
I think music curation, by definition, is hard to do. Here's the actual full snippet. It says, avoid overly clever transitions or organizing principles that will be lost on the average listeners.
Yeah.
Parentheses, unless the playlist itself is geared towards connoisseurs.
I don't know if anyone can take direction from that. Can you?
I could. I know what DJ, they mean, right? By that. Yeah. Which is like, don't try to be too so clever that the audience is like, why did he go from that one? Why does that song belong in this playlist?
Do you think people are going to overthink it to that level?
These people will, yeah, of course, because they're hiring the obsessives. Can you make your own playlist in this service? Because I think the idea of curation from people who really know music well is brilliant, but I also want the ability to create my own thing.
You know, I have not seen any mention of that.
And if it's only the experts, then that's too one-sided.
I haven't seen any mention of that in the stories we've covered. I think that most of this Project Daisy Beats Music stuff that we've heard about is what makes it different. So I'm assuming that a lot of you're going to have some of the same features of, yeah, you can call up on demand. Yeah, you can rate things. But this is supposed to be their monstrous hook, that their playlists are supposed to be curated by the best of the best, as opposed to an algorithm.
Chad, I believe Jason left you the keys to the randomizer. Would you please fire it up now? We have a straw poll today for our live audience. We were asking them to vote on these four stories. Tonight and tomorrow, Twitter reenacts one of the early battles of the American Civil War. I love this story, but it only got 13% of the votes.
Really? I voted for it.
I did too. Small firm creates a 3D printed scale model of the Hyperloop. Elon Musk thing. That got 23%. Average income per programming language broken out. We'll keep the link in the show notes if you're interested in what you should learn to make money. 28%. And scientists take graphene to the next level. It's another graphing story, another post along the way.
You love those graphene stories.
I do love a good graphene story. And actually, I really love Sam Grobart's take on Business Week. He says, finally, we have a practical graphene story. It's not just what it might do, it's what it can do. MIT Technology Review talking about using graphene as a switch in a processor, something it couldn't do before. And that's, you know, if you want to go from zero to one, you couldn't use graphene up until now. Now, graphene is wickedly conductive, as he says in the article. So that's the thing, is it can go much faster than silicon. If you can actually use it to switch bits, an 11-inch MacBook, this is his example, an 11-inch MacBook comes with a stock processor running at 1.3 gigahertz. A graphene-based processor, in theory, could run 300 times that.
Sign me up.
Sounds pretty good.
How's the battery life? That's my one question, I guess.
Well, and I would assume at the same power draw.
It was saying graphene transistor clocked at 427 gigahertz. 427 gigahertz.
Now, granted, processing power isn't everything anymore, but
it doesn't hurt.
That big of a jump must have an effect.
That problem, if this was in the Ubuntu Edge phone, that thing would have funded. I think they've got like another 20 hours to make $20 million.
Well, it's still in the lab, too. I mean, this is graphene we're talking about. We'll get this when I'm like 70, is what will happen. But at least soon. It can actually do it, you know? I'm the only
now
one.
Excited
me
about
and the 38% of the people who voted for
you
it
are the 38%
about that. Yeah. Let's move on to the calendar.
Well, we've got a little bit more news of that Sony announcement from yesterday. The PlayStation 4 will be released on November 15th. All right, remember that we're still waiting for the Xbox One release date. We don't have that yet, so Sony wins this round.
We'll never get one. Sony always wins. No, we'll get one eventually. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Ed in Portland, Oregon. Part of the rapidly expanding demand for ruggedized, weatherproof GPS-enabled cameras is for road bicyclists to protect themselves. While a bike commute is rarely as extreme as GoPro's advertisements, nor should it be, the GPS time and location stamp on the video has allowed cyclists to criminally prosecute hit-and-run drivers. A few recent high-profile cases hit TV news, so people now see this form of as a form of insurance available and it's cost-effective. Then it's posted on YouTube, tagged with license plate numbers and a driver description.
Apparently that's very popular in Russia too. So Garmin might be able to sell a lot of these because the Garmin comes with the GPS built in with their new GoPro competitor. Elite. Very cool.
Got another email from Rich in lovely Cleveland, who says the appeal of Beats headphones is primarily visual. Being seen wearing them, they're a fashion accessory, happens to play music with an extreme emphasis on bass. Extreme. Anybody who regularly takes public transportation will eventually see that guy wearing Beats headphones not plugged into anything. HTC makes phones, which primarily reside in your pocket. While there's some visual appeal, it's not really the main reason you buy that phone. Instead of making a play towards fashion with the investment, HTC bet on sound quality as a selling point, which to me is a misunderstanding about what makes Beats a successful company.
I'm not sure I agree with Rich on the point of visual appeal not being a reason people buy phones. I think it absolutely is.
Oh, very, very much
but
so.
But his point is well taken, that I don't think HTC bet on the right horse when they talked about Beats Audio, although they did sell the appeal of the look, too.
But isn't the Beats logo on the bottom of the phone, so your hand is covering it when you're actually holding it up? So maybe they should have had the Beats logo all over the device.
They should have sold over-ear headphones instead of in-ear
connect
headphones.
It.
It would have been much
that,
better.
I think that would have done it.
But the thing is, then they're the people who say that Beats isn't, you know, talking about audio snobbery, that Beats is like their bad headphones. So there's, you know, it doesn't work for everybody.
All right, that wraps it up for us today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. David Spark, thank you for being here. SparkMediaSolutions.com.
SparkMediaSolutions. Can I make a call? I'm writing an article, and I would love to get some quotes from people.
Oh, yeah. You mean like people in the audience?
People in the audience. If you are a cloud expert, I am working on an article for IDG.
Meteorologist. Wait, no, you mean cloud data. Sorry.
Yes. And if you can answer this question, or you have a cloud expert friend who can answer this question, please do. What don't most people know about the private cloud that they should? Email me at daspark@gmail.com. I'll throw that into the chat room as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thank you all for contributing to our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place where we find out what stories you guys are interested in having us discuss, and we use it when we make our lineups every day. Also, don't forget, if you would like to be on our listener co-host show, you got one more day to get your entry in. You have to be available on Wednesday, August 28th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. You need to tell us about yourself, why we should pick you, and then send the email to tnt@twit.tv with the subject line open mic. Deadline is end of day tomorrow, Thursday, August 22nd. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Do it now. We'll see you tomorrow when our guest will be Paul Fidalgo. Talk to you then. Done.